Greetings, greetings, once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. So glad to have you back. So glad to be back in the studio. I was on the road last week, driving again, driving. I'm always driving because I hate to fly. I feel like a prisoner when I'm on an airplane. Or even in an airport, I feel like a prisoner. And so I chose to drive out to San Diego, where it was, it was all right. I went out to San Diego without my extremely attractive audio engineer. And so it just wasn't the same. It really just wasn't the same, and it just wasn't all that enjoyable. And so I'm glad to be back here at the McBurney compound, bringing you the news of the week. We go worldwide to a worldwide audience unrestrained by the bounds of the traditional broadcast media here on the great World Wide Web. So glad to have you on board. And should we start with Hillary Clinton? Is this serious that she's running for president? Is this serious? Am I supposed to take this seriously? Because it seems like other people are taking it seriously. It's actually covered in the media as if it's a serious campaign. And she's really phoned it in so far. I mean, she announced on a YouTube video. She didn't even make a live speech. And now she's driving around in the mystery machine, shaking hands at staged events. This isn't real. Hillary Clinton will never be the Democrat nominee, in my opinion. That's my bold prediction for the week. The Washington Examiner published a story about the Hillary Clinton campaign as if it's a serious campaign. So they must be taking it seriously. They say that she plans to raise $2.5 billion for her presidential campaign. And that's more than has ever been spent in a national campaign ever, at least since the days of Julius Caesar, if he had to campaign. I don't think he had to campaign. It's roughly $40 per vote if she gets the same amount of votes that Barry got during his re-election. She won't do that because she won't be the nominee. The Democrats are throwing up anyone, please, anyone but Hillary. Listen, folks, the bottom line is you can't win a popularity contest, and the presidential election is just that. It's a popularity contest. And you can't win a popularity contest when everybody hates you. And everybody hates Hillary, from Bill right on down. Maybe Chelsea's daughter doesn't hate Hillary yet. But that's just a matter of time. Everybody hates Hillary, so don't take this seriously. In fact, we're going to move on. We're not going to cover any more Hillary Clinton news. In fact, we may avoid the politics file altogether, because that was just distasteful to have to go through that. Instead, let's go to the war file. PJ Media is reporting that the day after President Obama announced that the United States would be removing Cuba from the U.S. state sponsors of terror list. You've heard of this list, right? Yeah, apparently we have a list of officially recognized state sponsors of terrorism. Cuba's been on that list for decades. Well, the day after Barry announced that he would be removing Cuba, FARC terrorists murdered 10 Colombian soldiers and wounded 17 others in a terrorist attack on a military base down there in Colombia. So as if, just to slap back at Barry and say thank you. By the way, the FARC terrorists in Latin America have long been funded and sponsored by Cuba. And these leftist FARC guerrillas the day after. According to PJ Media, the Castro brothers continue to harbor international terrorists from Spain's Basque separatist group and from Colombia's Marxist FARC, as well as American domestic terrorists from groups like the Black Liberation Army. For those of us who remember such things, it is estimated, by the way, that 70 U.S. fugitives are being harbored by Cuba, including Joanne Chesimard. You remember Joanne? Yes, Assata Shakur, a convicted cop killer. from the early 1970s. She still lives freely down there in Cuba. And Barry met with Raul, not the original Castro, Fidel. He met with Raul down in Latin America this past week, maybe 2 weeks ago. Shook his hand, says you're no longer state sponsors of terror. And apparently the Cubans have seen fit to absolve America for all of our sins related to the fact that we are imperialists. Yes, we've been absolved of that by the Cubans. And so we can all thank Raul Castro for forgiving our sins. And we can thank Barry for taking terrorists off the terror list for nothing in return. Nothing. I don't know. Maybe he got some cigars. Maybe he'll get to go down there and be the first person to go to the beach down there in Cuba once the embargo's lifted. It's just disgusting. Further evidence of the retreat of America, which is frankly well-deserved because, let's face it, we just ain't what we used to be, ladies and gentlemen. That's a fact. In fact, in relation to that, the Wall Street Journal is reporting that the percentage of women in their 30s and 40s who are childless is on the rise. 15% of women aged 40 to 44 were childless in 2014. About 10% of the women in this age group were childless in 2010. And it's been going up steadily since figures have been kept since 2008, from about 9% now to over 15%. For women in their 30s, the rise in childlessness is sharper. About 18% of women 35 to 39 were childless, up a bit from 2012. And the Wall Street Journal reports that juggling work and family is a big factor. Yeah, you think? Do you ever wonder why they call it juggling work and family? Have you tried juggling? It's virtually impossible. I've tried it. Juggling is very difficult. And that's why when you try to work and have a family where both parents are working, that's why they call it juggling, because it's extremely difficult and virtually impossible. And eventually, things start falling down. Things start crashing to the ground. So yes, yes, juggling work and family is a big factor. And many, many American women are simply choosing childlessness. And that doesn't bode well for the future of Western civilization, as it is, for what it's worth. But let's move on from childlessness to personhood. We'll go to the personhood file. Some encouraging news, as reported by The Advocate. The Advocate? I think that's a homo magazine. The Advocate? Well, we'll have to look that up, but that's where I got the story. The Louisiana legislature is debating whether life and its legal protections begin at conception. Legislators have introduced a bill to amend the state constitution to say the following, quote, "Every unborn child is a human being from the moment of conception and is therefore a legal person for purposes of the unborn child's right to life and is entitled to the right to life from the moment of conception." Well, I can live with that. I like that. It's not really even radical to say that an innocent person has a right to life, but it's only not radical in my economy. It's actually a radical position to take. Let's see, this particular bill in Louisiana was introduced by State Senator Elbert Gilroy. He says the state needs to enshrine in our Constitution that Louisiana is a pro-life state. And here's what Mr. Gilroy says. If tomorrow, he says, if Roe v. Wade were overturned in Louisiana, we would automatically advance to the point where an unborn child is a human being entitled to life at the point of conception. Now, unfortunately, the state senator is incorrect. Yeah, he's incorrect. Because in almost every recent annual session, the Louisiana legislature has been passing laws regulating abortion. And so if Roe v. Wade were overturned tomorrow in Louisiana, it wouldn't automatically default to pro-life. In fact, it would default to the abortion regulations that the pro-life industry has passed over the past 20 or 30 years. And so that's why we need personhood legislation at the state level and hopefully someday at the federal level. I was just standing in church today, talking with some friends in the aisle when a little baby started crawling up the aisle. This baby can't be more than 5 months old. Crawling along. And one of my friends tapped me on the shoulder and said, watch it. And I looked and I thought, wow, I almost stepped on that baby. And I think I've come out publicly and said I'm against stomping on babies and puppies and kittens. And so I'm glad I was warned, and I'm glad I didn't step on that baby. We got babies crawling around Denver Bible Church. I mean, like ants. They're everywhere. You've got to watch your step at Denver Bible Church. Yeah, our church growth program has specifically more to do with pregnancy than, advertising or getting the word out in the community. We're just going to have a lot of kids. Now, let's get back to Louisiana. The opponents of the personhood legislation, they say that there are all kinds of unintended consequences. For example, personhood could criminalize birth control, eliminate abortion exceptions for rape in the life of the mother. It could affect the death penalty. That's right. It could scrap the death penalty, as if there's still a death penalty of any import in any state. They say it could also allow the fetus to be counted as a dependent for tax purposes and welfare benefits, and potentially lower the legal age at which young people can drive, smoke, drink, join the Marines by 9 months. That's, well, okay. You know, these unintended consequences that the anti-personhood forces of darkness try to push. I had a conversation with a young lady at church this morning about the unintended consequences. And I said, well, think back to the time before abortion was legal. And she tried to do that, but she's only 32, so she couldn't remember a time when abortion was illegal. And well, frankly, neither can I, because it's been legal in at least one state or more since the day I was born. But we have the internet, we have history books, we can go and look, and women weren't being investigated for miscarriage back before legal child killing was enshrined in our law. And all these other unintended consequences, well, these are risks I'm willing to take. And I don't want to leave it to the lawyers to decide. I'd much rather leave it to the Christians, frankly, since we're the only ones with the answer. Because Jesus Christ is the only one who has the answer, and we're the only ones who listen to him. So by default, we're the only ones who actually have the answers. And that's not most of us. That's only a very few of us. I mean, most of the Christian community is just a complete disaster. They don't know anything about God. They don't know anything about the Bible. They know they go to a church that has a cross on there, so they must be Christians. And that's where we are. All right, so we're encouraged by the effort in Louisiana to recognize that stomping on kittens, puppies, and babies is bad. A radical position that's been introduced. But I want to go, since we're in Louisiana, let's go back to the politics file. Now that the stench of Hillary Clinton has left the room, we can go back to the politics file where the governor there in Louisiana, Governor Bobby Jindal, he's made a statement. He says it's great to have tolerance for homosexuals. That's how he opens. So what he's trying to say here is, well, we shouldn't advocate special rights for homosexuals. So what does he open with? It's great to have tolerance for homosexuals. I mean, they're just killing themselves and destroying society. We should tell them they're wonderful and that everything's fine. It's wonderful to have tolerance. So after saying that, Mr. Jindal says, quote, my concern about creating special legal protections is that in our country, we have only done that in extraordinary circumstances. And he says, it doesn't appear to me that we're in one of those moments today. In other words, homosexuals are not being fire hosed and chased by dogs down the street. So why do we need to introduce legislation to protect their rights even further? And in that much, I agree with him. But I disagree that it's great to have tolerance for homosexuals. But I understand Mr. Jindal, he's basically taken the mark. He has bowed at the altar of homosexual rights. And so he can't just come right out and say, homosexuality is wrong. It's a criminal sexual deviancy that should be against the law. He can't. He'd probably be stoned right there on stage. Anyway, down there in Louisiana, legislators, along with Jindal, are mulling a religious freedom restoration act. Once again, pointing out that religious freedom no longer exists in America. That's why the legislators, the lawyers, the proctocracy who took our religious liberty from us, now they're going to pass laws restoring what they've taken and destroyed. Jindal says, and I like Bobby Jindal, or I should say I want to like Bobby Jindal, but I'm liking him less and less as I read this article. This is from WorldNet Daily. They report, Jindal says, I have faith and confidence in the people in America and New Orleans. He's got confidence in the people of New Orleans? Okay. You know, even our conservative politicians, who are the most conservative, are deluded humanists. That they believe they've got to declare their faith in the people and accept criminal sexual perversion as tolerable at the very least, and it's celebrated at the very worst. And you just got to ask yourself at some point, is this what passes for conservatism these days? Worldview. Angus, put that guitar away. That was when he saw Eddie Van Halen using the other hand up on the neck of the guitar, and Angus is like, I could do that. I could do that, mate. That'll mix things up a little bit. He had been using the same five or six riffs to make his first 16 albums, and then he saw Eddie use that, and he's like, all right. Anyway, let's move on. I had mentioned earlier in the broadcast how much I hate to fly. I hate to fly so badly that I drove to San Francisco and pretty much ruined my back and neck and shoulders. I'm permanently disabled now because of my hate of flying. By the way, I don't recommend to anyone that you try driving from Denver to San Francisco. That's just not humanly possible. It should not be done. I shouldn't have done it. I'm paying the price. But I will say that it was better than flying, because you never know what can happen to you when you enter the prison gates of any given airport. Let's take DIA, for example, Denver International Airport, which would have been the airport from which I would have flown to San Francisco if I was a sane person and didn't have an irrational fear of flying. And not, I'm not afraid the plane's going to crash. I'm afraid that at some point I'm going to go insane and just go ballistic and snap and go into some kind of fugue state and perhaps never return from it because I felt like I was in prison on a plane. But let's go to DIA and see what I may have experienced had I chosen to fly. CNN is reporting that two TSA screeners have been fired after conspiring to grope attractive men at Denver International Airport.
It says attractive men?
It says attractive men. Oh. What are you saying? Then I would have been okay? Well, I don't have to worry?
Well, you're going to San Francisco.
I was on my way to San Francisco, after all, if he'd have known. So I may not have been singled out based on my looks, but perhaps by the destination.
Yeah.
So this male TSA officer, who's a homosexual, by the way. They don't say that in the story, but he's a homosexual. And he had a plan, a plot. He plotted with another TSA officer, a female, who's just a deviant pervert, to basically make the machine say that something was going on so that the homo could then grope male passengers. Both TSA officers, according to CNN, have been fired. Yeah, but they say it's unlikely criminal charges will be filed because there is no identifiable victim as of yet. So the local reports say that some men have been coming forward and saying that, hey, I think I was groped, but it's kind of hard to tell because everyone at the airport who gets patted down, well, they're all groped. So it's hard to filter out the perverted deviant groping from the regular bureaucratic TSA groping that's authorized. So basically, we've all been groped. And there was a TSA fella, former TSA fella, on the local news last night here in Denver, who said this is a daily occurrence. Women, mostly women, he said, are groped on a daily basis. And it's kind of an inside joke over at the Transportation Security Administration. And I just want to thank President George W. Bush for the TSA and the mass groping of America that hasn't prevented a single terrorist incident ever. But it has afforded perverts the ability, well, to just be perverts and collect a paycheck for it. Yeah. Thanks, George W. George W. Bush, possibly the stupidest man to ever occupy the White House. I mean, we will find out. It'll all come out in the wash, and history will tell. But I think he was the stupidest man to ever occupy the White House. All right, now, so here's the thing about the homos. Jindal says no special rights, but it's great to tolerate them. And then they end up at the TSA. They get government jobs. And before you know it, they're pouring out of the closet left and right. And it's a torrent of deviancy. And let's just deal with them one at a time here as we move through the deviant file. In fact, this is the Mark of the Beast file, a relatively new file. My extremely attractive audio engineer has left the studio as the torrent of perversion and deviancy. She can't take it anymore. It makes her physically ill. And so I'll try to move through these as soon as possible while she monitors through the special studio window where she's in basically a dome of silence so that she doesn't have to hear this. From the New York Post, we'll start in a taxi cab. Yeah. Yeah, hold on to your hats. A cabbie in New York has been fined $15,000 for ordering two female passengers to stop kissing in his cab. Yep, Christina and her girlfriend Cassie were in the back seat of a cab, and let's leave it at that. And the cab driver, Mohammed Dabi, after they started making out, he became quite upset. He said, "Keep that for the bedroom and get out of my cab." And, he threw them out of his cab because they wouldn't stop with the, you know. Anyway, the two lesbians, the dykes, got out of the van. They confronted Dobby about his comment. And then they got into a fight with him over paying the fare. They felt, apparently, since he wasn't tolerant, that they didn't have to pay the fare. and they say he called them names. That's at least according to the dykes. He says he didn't call them any names. And he said he also tells if there's a normal couple in the back of his cab and they can't keep their hands off each other. He said he's thrown them out before, told them to stop or get out of his cab. So he's trying to defend himself, saying, look, I just don't like people slobbering all over each other in the back of my cab. Is that too much to ask, for crying out loud? He says he just doesn't like people, you know, with their hands all over each other in the back of his cab, and I think he has every right to that. Now, for those of you who are concerned about the emotional and psychological well-being of this pair of dykes, the couple, according to the Post, has set a June wedding date. Isn't that just wonderful? Just, yes, yes. So they've apparently gotten over all the emotional distress. They were awarded $5,000. By a court there for that emotional distress, and the cabbie had to pay the city of New York $5,000 as well, for no good reason other than the city of New York. Well, they make a lot of money off of fines and such things, and so $5,000 because they say he denied the dykes a public accommodation due to their sexual orientation. Yes, that's what the court ruled. Now, Mr. Dobby's lawyer, he says, wait a second, he says, my client, listen, my client has been volunteering at a food pantry. A food pantry that serves gay, low-income clients, as a matter of fact. Please don't kill my client. He works at a... Now, is there such a thing as a food pantry? that specializes in low-income homosexuals? I wasn't aware that there would be such a thing. I don't know that there is such a food bank. I think this is just the lawyer trying to ingratiate himself with the judge and the media. He sees this is going to be reported in the New York Post, and he wants everyone to know that while he and his client may not appreciate a pair of dykes slobbering all over each other in the back of his cab, he certainly thinks there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. Certainly not at all. So absolutely, it's just fine. And I'm so sorry that we even brought it up. And please don't kill us. Yeah. Now we move on further, deeper into the Mark of the Beast file. We'll move on to a WorldNet Daily story. The Colorado Civil Rights Division has denied that any discrimination took place when a bakery turned down a request to make cakes that included Bible verses. So this fella, William Jack, he's a Christian from Castle Rock. So one of the few people still willing to call himself a Christian in public, especially when it comes to homosexual wedding cakes. Talk about an issue that sends Christians running. They're terrified of cakes now, wedding cakes. It's awful. Anyway, the Colorado Civil Rights Division, you'll remember that Masterpiece Cake Shop in Lakewood, they were ruled against. You remember last year, the Colorado Civil Rights Division ruled that another bakery, Masterpiece Cake Shop, could not refuse to make a wedding cake for a homosexual couple, and the Masterpiece Bakery, they were called discriminatory. Well, now, William Jack goes, he tries to get two cakes made with the Bible verses, Psalm 45:7, Leviticus 18:2, Romans 5:8. He wants these on a cake. And now, no, I'm not going to tell you what they say. Go look them up for yourself. I mean, probably do you some good to crack open a Bible once in a while. Basically, these are verses that state God's opinion about sinners and homosexuality and things like that. You know, Bible verses. Well, the owner of the bakery, Marjorie Silva, says that she told Jack that her bakery does not discriminate and we accept all humans. But I will not make your cake. I don't know. She's implying maybe that Mr. Jack is not a human? I don't know. That's the implication I saw. And the bakery owner told a local news channel here in Denver that regarding Mr. Jack, if he wants to hate people, he can hate them, but not here in my bakery. No. By the way, he wanted cakes with Bible verses. So that's been now associated, at least by this baker, as hatred. It's hatred, she says, to put Bible verses on a cake. The officials at the Colorado Civil Rights Division say that the evidence shows that Silva refused to make the cakes because the customers' requests included derogatory language. Derogatory language and imagery. Yeah. Anyway... So expressing Christianity has been called discriminatory, derogatory. She says it's hate. Folks, eventually, in the not-too-distant future, it's quite possible that just expressing Christian thought will be declared more than derogatory. It will eventually be declared criminal. And let me tell you, I know you think I'm probably just paranoid, and I'm outside looking for black helicopters if I think that Christianity will ever be called criminal. But here's the thing, folks. Homosexuality was criminal. It was criminal behavior up until, I don't know, just the last century around the world. And now that homosexuality has gone from criminal to tolerable, to something to celebrate, to, hey, let's paint everything rainbow and let's dance naked in the street, which is about where we are now. It's just a matter of time until things come full circle and homosexuality will be celebrated in the public square. Christians will be driven from the public square, and in short order, we will be declared the criminals.
Feeling man.
I'm Doug McBurney, and this is the Weekly Worldview. So glad to come to you via the World Wide Web alongside my extremely attractive audio engineer. We're going to dive one layer deeper. This is almost like a Dante novel. We're going deeper and down into the Mark of the Beast file from the New York Times. Well, actually, this is reported on Breitbart, but it's about the New York Times. An op-ed writer for the New York Times named Frank Bruni. He's the Times restaurant critic, and he also happens to be a homosexual activist. They call him gay in the story, but we have no evidence that he's gay at all. In fact, he's quite upset. He's written that Christians who hold on to ossified, biblically-based beliefs regarding sexual morality have no place at America's table and are deserving of no particular regard. Bruni says that Christians are bigots. Bigots who prioritize scattered passages of ancient texts over all that has been learned since, as if the advances of science and knowledge meant nothing. So he's allowed now in the pages of the New York Times to call us bigots, say that we're deserving of no regard, saying that we have no place at America's table. He's allowed to publish this, and fine, he's got every right to publish his disgusting, vile, foul opinion. But the fact that the Times would include it in their newspaper, it tells you something about where we're headed as far as the whole tolerance game. Now, Bruni says he has a solution to the Christian problem. He says we need to give the Christians an ultimatum that they need to abandon their beliefs or else. He says just embrace the new morality preached by the mainstream liberal churches that see nothing wrong with any sexual arrangement you're comfortable with, and then we'll accept you.
Who is this guy?
He's the New York Times restaurant critic. And he happens to be a homosexual. He happens to, as you can well imagine. Has there ever been a restaurant critic who wasn't a homosexual? I think they're all homosexuals. But this one's particularly upset. So in so many words, he's saying that, we Christians have no place at the table. What else does he write? He says, our debate about religious freedom should include a conversation about freeing religions and religious people from the prejudices that they needn't cling to and can indeed jettison, much as they have jettisoned other aspects of their faith's history, rightly bowing to the enlightenment of modernity. Bowing, he said. I told you. What have I been saying? If you don't bow at the altar of homosexuality, eventually you'll be declared a criminal. I will be declared a criminal. Listen to what Bruni writes. Now, I know this is just some fag who writes for the Times, a restaurant critic. Who is this guy? Well, he has his cultural impact, and this is not an opinion that is strictly held only by this particular pervert. Here's what he says, finally. He writes, quote, religion is going to be the final holdout and the most stubborn refuge for homophobia. The final holdout, he calls us. And here's the thing about the perverts. And it's not just the homosexuals. I happen to point to homosexuality more than other things because it's just such a vile and vulgar. It's the one thing that even I, when I was growing up and was obsessed with sin and sex, drugs, rock and roll, all that stuff, it was the one thing that still made you cringe, right? I mean, back then, I mean, that was the one thing that was, you know, still considered, wow, that's really disgusting. And so that's why this gets my attention more than the people who, like Ashley Madison and those who advocate for adultery and things like that. But they're all part of the same bunch of deviants. They're all part of the same bunch of perverts. And, of course, it goes right up to the White House, as you can well imagine. One last story from the Mark of the Beast file. Barry Ho, the president, has installed a gender-neutral bathroom in the White House. The restroom, which anybody can go into, depending on how you are identifying gender-wise that day, what's your gender identity, well, you know. Before I had my coffee, I was kind of identifying as a male lesbian trapped in a female's body. But now that I've had some coffee and some time to think about it, I realize that I'm a transgendered questioning woman trapped in a gay man's body. But it doesn't matter because no matter how you're feeling, you can use the new gender-neutral bathroom at the White House. The restroom will be located in the Eisenhower Executive Office Building. Now, if that's not a picture of how far we've come, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, Dwight Eisenhower defeats the Nazis, wins World War II, rebuilds the entire world with America at the helm. And now we've put a gender-neutral bathroom where homosexuals, deviants, perverts, and garden variety sodomites can congregate, probably while Barry is plotting his next surrender in the Middle East. There can be a pile of homos in the Eisenhower Executive Office Building. Yeah, we have a quote. Do we? Oh well, before we get to that, this gender-neutral bathroom is a follow-up on Obama's executive order, according to Politico. Obama's order, which went into effect this past week, banning discrimination against gay and transgendered employees of companies that contract with the federal government. So if you want a government contract now, all you have to do is bow. That's all. Just bow to the enlightenments of modernity, as the Times reporter calls it. A spokesman for the White House, Jeff, says, quote, "The White House allows its staff and guests to use restrooms consistent with their gender identity, which is keeping with the administration's existing legal guidance on this issue and consistent with what is required by the executive order that took effect for federal contractors." Unquote. That was a spokesman for the White House. Eisenhower spinning in his grave right now. Mimi Eisenhower. Spinning in her grave. let's see here. Obama, saluted the struggles. Oh, that's right. This is, you remember I reported on this. This gender-neutral bathroom comes hot on the heels of Obama's salute to the struggles of gay Americans in his speech last month in Selma, Alabama, marking the 50th anniversary of one of the most important marches of the civil rights movement. So again, conflating deviant sex with the civil rights movement and doing it with a straight face in front of God and everybody. And the people who marched with Dr. King, they don't stand up and say, wait a second. No, Barry went right on and he did it. He said, you remember, he said, quote, "Where are the gay Americans whose blood ran in the streets of San Francisco and New York just as blood ran down this bridge?" At which point you would have thought one of the marchers would have stood up and said, hey, wait a second, please. I mean, the blood at Stonewall and in San Francisco, it's not like the blood in Selma. I mean, it contained a myriad of venereal diseases and was mixed with vodka and bourbon. I mean, the blood in Selma was clean. It was mixed with tear gas and canine saliva, but it was clean blood. I mean, Barry, what are you doing? But none of the marchers at Selma, none of the men who were there, stood up and said anything about this, because they've all bowed. They've all decided that they're going to take the mark. They're going to, it's the ultimate go along to get along. And I'm just not going to do it. I'm not going to do it, and I'll probably end up in prison for it at some point. I mean, I hope not. But I really don't see any way around it. I don't see this getting any better. Although there is a possibility that, you know, the devil tends to overplay his hand. And so there's a good possibility that these homos are going to keep pushing and keep pushing and keep pushing. And eventually, even the tolerant morons in the middle who just want to go along to get along, eventually they'll get annoyed. It'll be like the Hillary Clinton effect. You know, even the Democrats hate Hillary Clinton. Eventually, it's possible that even the liberals who aren't just full-on flaming homos are just going to get sick of the queers pushing it with them every step, you know, give them an inch, they take a mile every step of the way. Please. I hope that's eventually we all get sick enough of it that even the liberals stop, because this is ridiculous. I mean, it's gotten to the point that it's absolutely ridiculous. In fact, it's destroying the military. Yeah, let's go to the sad religion file. According to the Washington Times, Christians are leaving the U.S. military. Back in December, a chaplain for a Ranger battalion received an administrative letter of concern. Why? Because he used the Bible during a suicide prevention training session. Well, yeah, the Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers said that the chaplain had used his official position to force his personal religious beliefs on a captive military audience. We can't have that. They were so outraged. And last month, a Navy chaplain was removed and may lose his career for counseling against homosexuality and sex outside of marriage, which drives the leftists insane because they seem to thrive on a diet of homosexuality and sex outside of marriage. And to condemn anything having anything to do with anything to do with that, well, they just freak out. Michael Weinstein, president of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, he's one of the big Antichrist forces with the U.S. military. He says that while chaplains can believe whatever their religion teaches, those who think they must act on their religious teachings about sex or sexuality have no place in the military. Get out. He says we have no place in the military? The Uniform Code of Military Justice, at least last time I checked, listed adultery as a criminal offense. Yeah. Yeah, seducing another man's wife. I mean, last I checked, that was still a crime in the military. And this guy has the nerve to say we have no place in the military? Listen to what Weinstein says and why I think eventually they're going to declare us criminal. This is just another indication of where we're headed. Weinstein says, you can continue to believe that internally, but if you act on it, what you need to do is get out of the U.S. military because you have no right to tell a member of the military that they're inferior because of the way they were born. And here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen. Nowhere does the Bible imply that homosexuals are somehow inferior. That's never implied in the scripture. It's never been implied in any sermon I've ever heard. Homosexuals are sinners. That's what the Bible calls them. And everyone else at the church who hears that, well, they're all sinners too. I mean, we're all sinners. I think Mikey Weinstein has a bit of an inferiority complex. Why does he imply, because we tell him what he's doing, that he's inferior? I think maybe Mikey Weinstein feels inferior. In fact, maybe he knows deep down in his black little heart that he's the one with an inferiority complex. We never said you were inferior, Mikey. We just said you were a sinner. And we don't want you to kick us out of our jobs or throw us in jail or chop off our heads for telling you something we heard years ago. The only difference being at that point, at some point, we were willing to admit, yes, we're sinners, we're sorry. But Mikey Weinstein says we're making him feel inferior. I never said you were inferior, Mikey. I just said you were a sinner. You should just take that for what it's worth. Doug McBurney here. We're rapidly running out of time, and I've got a few more items that I simply have to get. Sorry about that, Sammy. We appreciate the sentiment, but we've got to move on with the show. Yes, we'll go to the politics file, a report of, about the Secret Service. Now, I don't know about you folks, but I always thought the Secret Service was one of the most professional organizations who absolutely have their act together. And I mean, they're professionals. They're, in fact, they're to be admired. Guys willing to put their life on the line. Guys who orchestrate and organize some of the most sophisticated security measures ever known to man. Well, another security Secret Service supervisor has been put on leave by the Secret Service and suspended. His security clearance has been suspended after a female employee has accused him of assaulting her. Uh-huh. Yeah, Javier Morales is the latest Secret Service officer to be suspended. Washington Post reports that this inquiry marks the second time in a month that the Secret Service has dealt with an alleged staff misconduct. And I'm just wondering, is the Secret Service degenerating? Because, I mean, they've had some problems here over the past year or two or four. What's happening to the Secret Service? Are they degenerating, or is it possible that there are political operatives around Barry and his girl cadre who run the country that are just good at getting rid of people who know too much?
SS.
The SS. The Secret Service is becoming the SS. Yeah, well, that's an interesting, I'm not going to argue with that because their initials would be SS, that's for sure. I know, you think I'm just paranoid, right? But remember David Petraeus? Does you guys remember what happened to David Petraeus? I mean, I know he did it to himself, but had David Petraeus not had significant disagreements with the Ho administration, that none of that would have ever come to light. He was hoist on a petard cast by the Obama administration, in my humble opinion. And it's just odd to me that people are running into the White House and landing helicopters at the Capitol, and now we've got agents who are accused of all kinds of misconduct being bounced out of the Secret Service, and it just strikes me as odd, that's all. But speaking of being struck odd, let's go to the Bad Religion file. A Wiccan priestess has delivered the opening prayer at the Iowa legislature. Yes, I know. Yeah, Eisenhower again spinning in his grave, right? All right, here's what the Wiccan priestess opened the Iowa legislature with as she led them all in a, quote, prayer. La, 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 we call this morning to God, Goddess, Universe, that which is greater than ourselves, to be here with us today. By the earth that is in our bones and centers us, may all here respect the independent web of all existence of which we are a part. Be with this legislative body and guide them to seek justice, equality, and compassion in the work that is before them today. Unquote. I feel so much better. That was the Wiccan priestess opening the Iowa legislature. A number of Christians, according to MRC TV in Iowa, a number of Christian lawmakers refused to attend in protest, yes. And others turned their backs during the priestess's prayer. Yeah, a Democrat state representative there, Liz Bennett, says she didn't know that inviting the witch would be as controversial as it has been, she said. I mean, this is America 2015. I thought all the Christians had been put in prison. What? Not yet? No, well, we're not in prison yet, and we don't appreciate Wiccans and pagans leading the proctocracy in prayer, although perhaps it is appropriate now that the government has been captured by renegade lawyers and their brothers-in-law, sisters-in-law, nephews, nieces, and mistresses. Perhaps now that the government is basically, I mean, it might as well be a pagan temple. It might as well be a pagan temple with a whorehouse in the basement. So maybe having a pagan priestess open with prayer is entirely appropriate. I don't know. By the way, you may not be familiar with the Wiccan religion, and this is the bad religion file, so we do want to educate people. The Wiccan religion appeared in the 20th century and relies on a mixture of neo-pagan beliefs and practices. There's no one leader or central authority, and they're represented by a five-point pentagram star inside of a circle. What? I thought that was Motley Crue's logo. Are you telling me they got that from the Wiccans? Actually, I thought that was a symbol of Satan. I don't know. Well, they say that they don't really have any specific beliefs or anything. So I suppose they're as likely associated with Satan as they are with Motley Crue. And they're certainly not associated with anything at all to do with the living God and the creator of the universe. And speaking of real religion, let's go to a version of real religion that has become strange. This is the strange religion file. And the Catholic diocese, most Catholic dioceses in England now have an official exorcist. Did you know that? Exorcisms are on the rise. Wow. Only half of the Catholic diocese in the United Kingdom had exorcists just 5 years ago. So exorcism is through the roof over in England. And what does one of the leaders of the Catholic exorcism movement, what does he credit it? Why does he say this is happening? Because of pornography and drugs. Yes. Yes, they say because of pornography and drugs, you can allow an evil spirit to enter you. Yeah. And the priests, well, he gave his diatribe here on demonic possession and such. There were four priests at a recent conference in Rome. Four priests from the United Kingdom who went to learn more about the devil and exorcism. And the priests, while they did give an interview for this article, they have declined to be named because they say, well, if we give you our names, every nutter rings us up. We don't want every crazy person in England calling us, asking us for an exorcism, you understand. So the priests, who they say they believe this stuff. They actually know that the people who want exorcism, they're mentally deranged. He calls them nutters, which is, that's British slang for an insane person who's very annoying. Well, I'd love to give you my name, mate, but every nutter in the UK will be calling me up. So they know what it's all. By the way, you folks may not know this, but in the Bible, the whole panoply of biblical history, the entire 4,000 years that's covered in the Bible, there's only a very small period of time where demonic possession is actually recorded. And that's during the 3 years of Jesus' earthly ministry. I bet you didn't know that, right? Yeah, seriously, it's nowhere else in the Bible before or since. Nowhere else is there demonic possession except the 3 years during Jesus' earthly ministry. And, you know, I never realized that until I read the Bible. And once I read the Bible, I was like, wow. Anyway, I heard that from a fella. So I looked through the Bible, and sure enough, there's no record of demonic possession before or since. Why is that, you think? Well, I'm not going to tell you. Read your Bible. Maybe you'll figure it out. Anyway, if you ever come out to Colorado, you can stop by. I'll meet you at a local restaurant, and I'll tell you why if you haven't figured it out. Any restaurant except Chipotle. We will not be meeting at Chipotle. Was that where Hillary went in her fake campaign?
Yeah, yeah.
So did you hear that? She didn't look, she didn't make eye contact with any of the workers, and she did not leave a tip.
I wouldn't either.
All right. Let's move on. Not a big fan of Chipotle, I guess. All right. Reason number 899 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Dateline Panama City from the Panama City News Herald. Officials have arrested at least two students on charges of rape. Both students were attended Troy University in Alabama. They were down in Panama City on spring break, and an incident occurred. This incident occurred in the presence of hundreds of witnesses on a crowded beach in broad daylight. Yes, at least two men. And obviously there are more because they're calling this a gang rape. It happened in front of everyone on the beach in the middle of the day, leaving officials concerned with how much crime has gone unreported or ignored by visitors during spring break. Well, what do you think? By the way, Troy University is a publicly funded university in Alabama. So get or keep your kids out of the government schools because they might get raped or they might commit a rape in a drunken stupor, blind drunk on the beach, broad daylight in front of everyone. Why wasn't the crime reported? It's because these ignorant products of the government schooling system, they didn't realize there was a crime occurring. They just thought it was people having sex on the beach. That's why it wasn't reported. There was a video, which is the only reason this ever became an issue. Someone recorded a video and posted it online, and the police saw it. The sheriff says, quote, of the incident, he says, quote, he likens the scene to wild animals preying on a carcass laying in the woods, unquote. So that's how the sheriff saw it. But that's not how the other products of the public schools saw it. Yeah, hey, somebody needs an exorcist, right? Tell you what. Not surprising at all what goes on in spring break, but it has reached a level of depravity that is shocking to any of us who still have some connection to morality or anything like that. Now, speaking of morality, I want to go to Aaron Hernandez's mom. Aaron Hernandez was found guilty. Not Aaron Hernandez's mom. Odin Lloyd's mom. Aaron Hernandez, the football player, was found guilty of killing Odin Lloyd. And his mother, Ursula Ward, she was interviewed and asked how she feels about it. And Aaron Hernandez has not apologized or repented for killing Odin Lloyd. I mean, he hasn't gone on TV and said, I'm so sorry. I want to say sorry to his mother. I want to say sorry to... No, he hasn't done that. But that does not prevent Odin Lloyd's mom from saying, quote, I forgive the hands of the people who had a hand in my son's murder, either before or after, and I pray and hope that someday everybody out there will forgive them also. So Odin Lloyd's mom has forgiven Aaron Hernandez, even though Aaron Hernandez still insists he didn't even do it. He says the jury was wrong. He didn't have anything to do with it. He wasn't even in that zip code. How could they possibly say I'm guilty? And Lloyd's mother is forgiving him. Folks, forgiveness without repentance cheapens forgiveness. And it sends the wrong message, especially to Aaron Hernandez. Odin Lloyd's mother should want Aaron Hernandez's blood. I mean, Aaron Hernandez should be killed for what he did. And Odin Lloyd's mother should be the first one in line calling for it. That would send the right message to Aaron Hernandez that he needs to repent or face the wrath of the living God for all of eternity. But instead, she forgives him. And Aaron Hernandez continues on his way straight to hell with jet rockets. Now, finally, ladies and gentlemen, let's go to the politics file. You know that Loretta Lynch has been nominated for eternal general... has been eternally nominated, I'm sorry, for Attorney General by the Barry Ho administration and the Four Horsewomen of the Apocalypse who run the government. And her nomination has been languishing because Republicans are making some sort of issue about abortion. I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but the Republicans basically want the Democrats to acknowledge that the Republicans are pro-life, and then they'll go ahead and appoint Loretta Lynch to further destroy the country. I'm not sure I understand all the ins and outs of the politics, but the bottom line is Loretta Lynch, the vote on her confirmation as Attorney General has been put on hold, and now, what did I say? Did I say now? I said now. That's right. Al Sharpton, now, and the National Action Network. We are going to fast until Loretta Lynch is voted upon, and we will do our utmost and our everything. Until Loretta Lynch's nomination is voted on, we are declaring a fast. We will not eat. We will not drink. We will not sleep until Loretta Lynch is voted upon. Said, I believe that was actual tape. And now, Mr. Sharpton went on to note that the fast will be a what they call a relay fast. Have you heard of this? That's where each faster forgoes food for a single day, and then another person comes in and replaces him. Al Sharpton, that guy doesn't need to fast. If that guy loses any more weight, they're probably going to bury the guy. He looks terrible. Anyway, I'm out of time. Anyway, don't worry about Al. He's going to be okay. And don't worry about Loretta Lynch. She'll be approved, and she'll destroy America. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here, and, of course, my extremely attractive audio engineer. May the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.